Hello and welcome back to the Comic Lyra podcast, the podcast that does deep dives into the best, worst, and middest of comic books, graphic novels, and sometimes mangas. I'm your host, the soon-to-be-known as Comic Stan, and with me, as always, is my menacing co-host, it's Jamie.
Yo, what's up?
Are you okay with menacing? Because you've taken umbrage with some previously, and I thought that might have been one of them.
So I had a really good shower before I came here today, which has put me in a really good mood. You know those showers where you feel like you just really got into all the nooks and crannies and you just feel good?
I know those showers as a teenager where the parents are like, what's he doing in there? Is that what you mean?
I wasn't masturbating, if that's what you're asking.
I mean, in a roundabout way, that was what I was asking, but...
No, I didn't go, oh, I'm gonna talk about Star Wars with Ryan for a bit this evening. I'd better rub one out. I just had a really nice shower.
I mean, some people really love Star Wars, so...
Yeah, I mean, if anybody was going to feel this strongly about something that we've made, it would be a Star Wars episode, wouldn't it?
Potentially. I mean, Void Rivals was Transformers. I don't know if that crosses over at all or not. Like, I know G.I. Joe doesn't get that, because G.I. Joe is very much like eat your vegetables and take your vitamins kind of thing.
Yeah,
whereas Transformers are like, that Transformers a bit sexy.
Is that how you feel about Transformers?
No, we addressed already. We don't know Transformers. I'm saying, like, there could be people who are like that.
I don't know. You sound
some people feel that way about
that
cars.
Statement.
So Transformers are pretty close to that, don't they? I should have said.
Are we aiming for the modified car community with the Transformers episode? Is that what you're saying?
No, but more like there's a psychological potential for crossover. I think, like, the modded car community aren't going to be like, I don't think there's any crossover between them. Like, actual people who love modded cars and it's so modded, it's a robot.
You do see them every once in a while, though. You'll be, like, going to get a KFC at, like, 10 o'clock on a Sunday evening. And the KFC, I'm thinking of a specific KFC in Norwich, Ryan, that's attached to, like, that business park. And you pull in and there's a bunch of idiots revving their cars that look like Transformers.
I know what you mean by they look like Transformers, like the vibe.
Yeah.
But I feel like Transformers actually turn into less innocuous things, unless they specifically have to. This is coming from someone who doesn't know about Transformers.
Isn't Optimus Prime like... Oh, I know, yeah, I suppose Optimus Prime is a very normal lorry, isn't he?
Yeah. I was about to say, except for the flames on the side, but then again...
That's pretty normal.
Yeah, for, like, the American truckers. Like, ours over here, lorries, are pretty beige and boring, aren't they? Maybe they'll have a logo from where they're carrying it, says, like, Boots or Morrison's on it or something.
Yeah.
You know. But in America, they're, like, they've got the lit-up thing in the back of the hood, which has, like, a light-out woman or something on the back, and they've got, like, a big metal, like, something on there as well.
I feel like
mud flaps.
I feel mud flaps.
That's the thing. But they have things on the mud flaps.
American trucks are. I mean, American truckers are known for being a bit unhinged as a community, aren't they? And I feel like that has to do with the way that they're commissioned. Like, I feel like American truckers are self-employed, whereas British lorry drivers are typically employed, right?
I think you're making a great point there. I do think we're veering now into like an economic podcast of, like, what are the economic differences between British lorry drivers and American truck drivers, which I'm not saying is a boring subject, but I'm saying it's not what we're here for.
Well, you asked me
a sincere question. I'm not blaming you. I took us down this route, but now that I'm seeing someone else continue, I'm like, from the outside, I'm seeing how boring this is now.
It's your fault.
I know. I'm not blaming.
Now I take umbrage. This is the point at which I take umbrage, Ryan.
Again, I'm not blaming you. I'm saying we have ended up in this place.
No, you brought me here.
All right, one of us may have brought the other here. But that's why I have to be the one to stop it. So,
okay, yeah.
So back to Star Wars, because when this episode comes out, it will have been May the 4th. Very popular Star Trek saying, I believe. Are we not doing the thing where we piss them off?
I don't know if I can... Do you know what? It's not the Star Wars crowd that I'm scared of.
Our Trek ones?
Yeah, the Trekkie. Oh, mate, I'm more worried about the Trekkies than the Star Wars
I think
fans.
The Trekkies are more like themes of peace and stuff, aren't they? It's like, you know, like forging connections with other races and that kind of... Like, that's what Star Trek's about, isn't
because
it?
Because peaceful source material has never created violent people. Every religion ever.
I'm just saying of the two. And I mean, if you read a Bible, they're not peaceful. Like,
well, but, some of them are.
Yeah, some. No, parts, but not all of it. But what I'm saying is, of the two, your Star Treks, I think, are going to be more peaceful based on the source text than your Star Wars.
No,
I mean, the clue's in the name.
The Trekkies are well more intense.
Star Wars literally about warring, whereas Trekking is about trekking, I guess, across space.
Have you ever seen Star Trek?
Space trucking, is that?
That's exactly what it is. And they've got trucking. Flames on the sides of the Enterprise.
And we're back to truck. And Kirk's like,
what would Captain Kirk's trucking name be? He'd be Kirk Kirk, wouldn't he?
I was trying to think of something like interspecial kisser or something like that. I was trying to think of he got off with a lot of alien women, and that Kirk he would incorporate that. Someone smarter and clever than me would have come up with a better thing to incorporate.
A nice pun there,
like a pun or something. I like a good pun.
If you can come up with a good pun about Captain. Yeah, just put it on a postcard and send it in to us.
So we're past the 5-minute mark now. We're still not on like the main subject because we keep coming back to trucking. Again, I'm not blaming you. I'm not casting blame. I'm just addressing this thing we're both caught in for some reason.
Can we start a lorry cast?
Separately.
We could do a podcast that isn't about trucking, but that is aimed at truck drivers.
But then what else would it be about?
Well, we'd have to really bore down into the trucker's mentality.
I feel like we're already appealing to people who sit down for most hours of the day. So isn't that like close enough, like a crossover?
If you're a trucker who listens to the Comic Lira podcast, please write in. We want to make... I specifically have decided that I want to make more content that is aimed exactly at you, the one truck driver who has this as part of their media diet while they're driving.
Whereas I would say I think we are already catering to them.
Yeah?
That's all I'm saying.
And is there a big crossover between the trucking and comic book community?
Well, like I said, they mostly sit down for most hours of the day.
But they're driving.
Yeah, sitting down.
They can't read comics while they're driving.
No, I'm not saying they both read comics. I'm saying they're both sedentary people. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, that makes
sense. And I say that as part of one of those communities. So I think it's fine. And I don't drive a truck.
No, you don't.
No. So Star Wars, May the 4th, that's happened by the time this episode comes out.
May the 4th. Be Vulcan?
Yes, and Stargate. Yeah. Battlestar Galactica. And so because of that, what they're also doing is they're re-releasing Phantom Menace in cinemas.
Yeah, I kind of want to go see it.
I kind of do, but I feel like I should, at this point, I think I need to like invest in a Jedi robe to like go see it in. Because why not go all out, like, you know?
The thing I came around wearing last week to record in was kind of halfway there, wasn't it?
That was a poncho, so Star Wars love their ponchos these days.
It was a big poncho with like a big floppy hood though, wasn't it?
Have you played the Jedi game? I can't remember what it was, last one. Jedi Survivor?
The one who had the kid from...
Shameless, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't play it, but I was so baffled by the fact that they got an actor in to model the character after.
Yeah, and voice it and everything as well. Like,
it just seemed like such a bold choice. Like the
it's
only
not
other
that
game,
uncommon now.
No, because there was that big game that did that with Keanu, wasn't there?
But that wasn't even the first. Like, Far Cry been doing that since way back. Like, they started getting, Call of Duty. They had buddy Jon Snow actor like him in it like 10 plus years ago when Game of Thrones was actually like hot. They also got Kevin Spacey, but they don't talk about that one anymore. But yeah, it's been a thing. Like, it's been building up, you know? And they've been voicing. Like, I mean, when we did the Fallout one, bloody Matthew Perry was in Fallout.
Yes.
So
I wasn't aware of that trend in video games.
Right.
That's why I was so baffled by it, because I just wasn't aware that that was a thing.
Yeah, it's definitely grown. Like, it's become more acceptable, I think, among actors to do a video game where you're not just like, it's not just cashing in a check. Like, it's actually like a thing you can properly act in because of the technology, and you can make a performance out of it, and especially if you're the main character across the whole game. So yeah, basically why I bring that game up is because you can interchange lightsaber handles and parts and ponchos. You can like unlock and wear different ponchos.
Is that so? They're the unlockables, ponchos.
Ponchos and lightsaber, which you don't even see. Now, I'm not talking about the color or
the
like
handle, right?
Like literally just the fine details on the handle that you don't see most of the time while playing.
So I have no interest in going to a Disney park. It just doesn't turn me on because I'm an adult. But there is one attraction that I really want to do. And so Disney, if you could just like set this up in Norwich City Centre just for me, and I can just come and do it, is the one where you build a lightsaber.
Oh, I thought it was going to be It's a Small World after all.
Fucking hell, Ryan. Do you want to hear a story? It's story time with Jamie.
All right, I'll put in time. How long is the story?
It's brief. It's a brief story, but it's funny. So it starts with my dad being disabled.
As all great stories do.
So the context for this story is that my dad has a disability. He's okay.
Yeah.
Don't worry. He's just disabled. And we went to Disneyland. I would have been like 7 and my sister would have been about 5. But because dad was disabled, he got priority. Like, that's one of the things the Disney parks are really good at. And so we basically had free fast passes for everything or every ride in Disneyland Paris that we wanted to be on. And my sister was fucking obsessed with It's a Small World.
Yes.
No. Ryan's just walked away and has expected me to keep talking.
Well, I gave you the keep going sign.
Well, no, because I wanted
you
to react.
I came back and gave a yeah. No, was that not enough?
I'm not happy about it.
All right.
I'm not happy about it.
You were saying.
You're leaving that in, all of it.
I have to now, yeah.
So essentially, we got skipped to the front of the queue of every ride.
Right.
Which meant that our Disney experience was very different to other people's Disney experience. And part of that is that my sister was able to go on It's a Small World about 15 times in a day because she loved it. And so that music is seared into my memory so powerfully, Ryan, that when you say It's a Small World to me, I internally shudder.
I've heard it's magical, though.
It's a small world. It's just in there. The other hilarious story is that her little legs got tired. And so my mum was pushing her in my dad's wheelchair. And she pushed her up to a line to meet a bloke dressed as Pluto.
Mm.
That's a thing that you do at Disney parks. You cuddle and get signatures from Disney characters.
From hungover teenagers and young adults wearing costumes.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And so they walked. She walked. My mum had my sister, who is not disabled, in a wheelchair because her legs were tired and my dad was very proud and didn't want to use it. And they pushed her up to the line and the character saw my sister and beckoned her to the front of the line because they thought it was a poor little disabled girl.
Yes.
And she jumped out of the wheelchair, ran, and then jumped into Pluto's arms. And there was just a queue of enraged French people. It was magical.
As if not only thinking that someone along the line, someone within your group had orchestrated the faking of a disabled child.
Yeah.
But that it was so poorly organized that the first moment of excitement, she jumped out as if it wasn't rehearsed before. Like, whatever you do, don't get out of the wheelchair in front of people. So it's doing a really shitty thing, but really poorly organized as well, which is the, you know, comes hand in hand, really, doesn't it?
There was no intention of deceit. She just had tired little legs.
But that was the perception of, like, they perceived you as I said, planning a really awful thing, but really bad at planning it.
I just, honestly, you know, you have the occasional memory from childhood that's as distinct as something that happened yesterday. That memory is seared into my brain, but the rest of the time I get to have a brain. It's fantastic.
For me, it was Spider-Man 2 on the PlayStation 2.
Really?
My only childhood memory.
Is that a formative one for you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a great game. First free roam with web swinging. They nailed the web swinging mechanic like really early on and then made it worse like every game afterwards until PS4, like two generations later. I was joking when I was like, that's my formative memories, but now that you asked, actually it was pretty important to my development as a person, I think. So anyway, back to the comic or Star Wars. I've been sitting on this for a while now because, again, May the 4th, Star Wars, all that jazz, all that canteen jazz, you know. I think that's how it goes, isn't it? When they're playing
yeah
with all that, I thought I was looking at titles for us to cover. I wanted one that was appropriate to what we're doing this for. There was, apart from long-running titles that we'd have to jump in the middle of, like, there's two major ones that are still going: Star Wars the comic and Darth Vader the comic. But there
hasn't,
like,
Star Wars the comic been going for a really long time as well?
Not that, I mean, essentially, yeah, but there was one in 2017. So both those titles started in 2017 or restarted with the Disney Marvel thing, and they were really well received, and I think they went for ages, and then they started again at one at some point.
Yeah.
But more of like a justified...
Oh, we talked about this last week, didn't we?
I think it was more justified. I think they went to like 30, 40 plus issues and were like, we're restarting with different people.
If you're a first time listener and you'd like to know why I groaned at this, just go back to our She-Hulk episode and you will find out.
And eventually, one day I'll have a video about it as well on on a soon-to-be Comic Stan channel. One day.
Ugh. Oh my God. Do you know what? You have been soon to be Comic Stan for so fucking long now.
And one day I'm going to clean my room as well. They're both on the list. One day.
I just want you to make a bloody video so you can say, hi, I'm Comic Stan.
And one day. So, couldn't find anything that wasn't jumping into something initially. Everything else was too early to have started. So I was like, right, let's just grab a bunch of these. Let's cover even if one to two to three issues. Let's just, you know, read a bunch and just see what the current state of Star Wars is. Star Wars comics are
relatively new, aren't they?
They are literally like two or three issues, like currently released. So they're all within this year. They're all, surprisingly as well, all prequel characters.
Well, I noticed that.
Exactly. So that helps us doing the Phantom Menace and everything else. The main thing is because we're doing a bunch of different titles, Star Wars titles, I thought because it's May the 4th, maybe it becomes an annual thing, that this episode could be somewhat of a Star Wars Gishborg.
How long did you spend working on that?
Not as long as you would think. I've surprisingly came quite quickly.
If by not as long as you think, you mean negative time.
Well, how would that work? How does negative time work?
The amount of time that you spent working on that. No, like...
I was given time once I figured it out. Like, no, I went like, back in time.
It caused a kink in time. Imagine having a time kink.
I think you were going down a route and then realized it was a bit of a dead end. I was like, but I could bulldoze my way out of it with some illogic.
Yeah, no, no. I mean, you literally just... what for the listener, what Ryan saw was me say a thing... and then look out of his window while I tried to work out what my next move was.
When you start a sentence and then midway through you go, where am I going with this? Which is the podcast, essentially. So, yeah, Star Wars Gishborg.
It doesn't get any better the more you say it, Ryan.
I mean, I think it rolls off the tongue if you focus really carefully.
It's a Star... it's a Star Wars board.
I mean, you got to get the wars in, then, don't you? Especially for the SEO when we make the title.
Well, that's literally what I said. I said a Star Wars board. A Star Wars... I had it. A Star Wars... you're right. Difficult.
So I took the original name of the thing, Smorgasbord, and I...
Smorgasbord. I thought it was a smorgasbord.
No, Borg. Smorgasbord.
Is it
that's
Borg?
I had the same thing. That is a common... misinterpretation.
So it's a smorgasbord.
That's the literal name for a board, typically a board covered in a bunch of food. They call it a smorgasbord. I think it's a coincidence that it's ends in Borg and we call what they put on a board. I think that's a coincidence.
Which language is this in?
You put me on the spot now.
Is it Swedish?
I think it's Swedish, but I will double check just in case we do have any Swedish listeners and we don't want to offend them.
I bet we do have Swedish listeners, you know. Because our listeners are from all over the shop, aren't they? They are literally from all over the gaff.
So it's a luncheon or super buffet offering a variety of foods and dishes, such as hors d'oeuvres, hot and cold meats, smoked and pickled fish, cheese, salads, and relishes. It does not say which country it comes from. I think it's because technically it's part of the English language. Because we use it so much, so it's one we've adopted,
like a loan word.
Yeah, like croissant is obviously the original and
the original.
Yes,
the original.
But we didn't bother anglicizing it, did we?
We did massively.
I know, but yeah, we didn't replace it with a different one.
Yeah, I mean, beef would have been the perfect one to choose, but
yeah, I was going more like a direct one, like or even like phrases like je ne sais quoi or déjà vu.
Beef is the perfect example.
Because it's a French word?
Well, so yeah, before the Normans took over, an old English person would have just said we're eating cow meat.
Oh, it is a Swedish word I have seen. Smorgasbord, Swedish.
Thank you for interrupting my flow there.
Well, I just saw the information that you asked for, you requested
Thank you.
Earlier.
No, I appreciate it. So in a pre-Norman English person wouldn't have had a separate name for a cow, and the meat of the cow that they ate is just meat. They'd have said it's roasted oxen or roasted cow or whatever. It's because these things became too expensive for the poor Anglos to eat under Norman rule. And so it was a way for the Anglo-Saxons to mock the Normans by saying, oh, the fancy man eating is boof. And then by proxy, beef then became the name for the meat of the cow. And so beef is a direct loanword from French.
Right. And how would you rank that in terms of facts you've given compared to the salted cod? Like,
I think it's a good one. I think it's a good one. Do you not think it's a good Jamie fact?
It is a good Jamie fact in the comparison to Jamie facts. I think it's the higher ranking ones. Like,
it's in the upper echelon.
Upper echelon, yes.
Of hot garbage facts that I just spew forth on the podcast.
I wouldn't say hot garbage. It's more of the case of, and I've done this as well, when you say like a, hey, fun fact about that or interesting thing about that, it's normally is exactly that, an interesting fact.
Yes.
But they tend to also be sometimes conversation stoppers. Because if someone doesn't also have an interesting fact to rebut with or comment or yes. further conversation on your very specific piece of information, it's not like, hey, here's a thing that happened to me today, and then people can, you know, run with that.
Yeah.
But when you give that, the most likely response is, that is interesting. And you go, thank you for acknowledging my interesting fact is interesting.
Yeah, I suppose
And then you find yourself in like a, anyway. Yeah.
This is why I do it on the podcast, Ryan.
To kill the conversation.
No, because I know you have to respond. Like, you can't just go, yeah, and leave dead space like you could in a cafe or a pub, because we're doing a thing.
So from now on, what I should do is just go back to the comic, like straight afterwards.
No, because I would be upset.
Okay, I'll give you a thanks for that interesting, thanks for that Jamie fact. Anyway, back to the comic.
Star Wars.
Yes, Star Wargish board.
I didn't like any of them.
I liked bits of the Mace Windu one. Windu.
Hello, I'm Mace Windu.
It's like your Superman and Batman.
Batman, yeah. He's Mace Windu. No, I like Mace. The thing is, the difference there is I like Mace Windu. I think I'm hearing Mace Windu and I'm like, that's exactly what he should be called.
Yes. So Mace Windu, I liked parts of it. Some parts of it were a bit lazy, but there were things I liked. The Jango Fett one, I started to see the patterns in all of them, if you read them in that order. And then the Darth Maul one, I thought was very interesting. I actually quite liked it, but I also have my biggest grievance with the Darth Maul one.
Well, let's start with Darth Maul then.
Shall we? Okay, yeah. So let me just jump credits just to say this one is written by Benjamin Percy. Now, he's interesting because he's been writing Wolverine recently.
Right.
And I really enjoyed his Wolverine writing, as well as X-Force.
Have I read any of his Wolverine?
No, but I'm considering proposing some to actually for us to cover, because it's very interesting. There's a kind of isolated story at the end of this 50 issue run that's like coming to an end like within the next couple of months. It's called Wolverine Sabretooth War.
Yeah.
And I think it does not need much information from what happened before to enjoy it, because none of the Sabretooth stuff has happened in the Wolverine run itself. It's happened in other Soul Sabretooth like mini series, like four or five issue series. So we might do it because it's really violent, and I'd be interested to see like what you find it as, like jumping into a semi-Krakoa era X-Men thing.
And that was by the same dude.
Yeah, by Benjamin Percy, yeah. So we might revisit him. But so this Darth Maul, specifically titled Black, White, and Red, which we will get into exactly why it's called that, written by Benjamin Percy, artist Stefano Raphael, and color artist Raul Angulo. So called... it's one issue that's only come out so far. It is an extended length comic book issue, and it is called, well, do you want to tell the audience why it's called Black, White, and Red?
Yeah, essentially Darth Maul is the only Sith at this point.
Him and Sidious.
Yeah, but there's a master and apprentice,
yes.
Isn't
there? Always two.
So yeah, so Darth Maul is the sole Sith apprentice at this point, and he is fighting some beings that are agents of chaos in the name of order. And so it's him sort of deciding.
He's like, order!
Well, it's him deciding whether or not he's going to embrace chaos, isn't it?
Mm.
And I'm going to be honest with you, I found it all very on the nose.
I mean, yeah, I see your point on that. I wasn't expecting anything else in that regard. I guess from my perspective, I enjoyed it more because it was a new kind of Star Wars like that we haven't seen before. Like, I've never seen Star Wars this focused on horror before. And that was a kind of breath of fresh air for me.
Yeah, potentially. And I suppose if you're going to do that, you might as well do it with a character who's already really fucking weird looking.
And is a bit of a cult character who's not had much else to do. I mean...
Yeah, so... Because we talked about this a while ago, didn't we? And there is... He's like quite a fully fledged character in...
The Clone Wars and Rebels. Yes.
Because my experience of Darth Maul is with him not having a voice.
Yes. Even though, well, technically he does, because he was voiced by, do you know who he was voiced by?
I want to say like Ralph Fiennes or someone.
It was Peter Serafinowicz. You 100% have seen him in stuff. He's a British actor, comedian actor. Trying to think what he would be most famous for. In Shaun of the Dead, he is the flatmate who gets bitten really early on.
Oh, of course.
Yes. He's his sketch show stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I know exactly who you mean. Yes. Now. Yeah, of course.
And most famously recently, I don't think you've seen this, but it warrants mentioning, he played the Tick in the latest series of The Tick on Amazon Prime.
Right.
Tick is like a very fun homage slash parody of superhero stuff. He's a character who literally doesn't know where he's from, but he's like, I was born to be a superhero. And everyone's like, all right,
but
fine.
Darth Maul doesn't have any lines in...
He does have some small, quiet conversational lines with Sidious, I think.
Does he?
Yes. And they're so easily forgettable because there are points, there's scenes people don't even remember. The scenes that people remember of him is fighting the big lightsaber
is this one of those things where it's like Star Wars revisionist history though, because those films get fucked with once every 5 years, I swear.
They 100% they do. You're on the nose. No, it was back, I remember back when it first came out, and people, like, I remember Peter Serafinowicz like being credited as the he's voicing the new bad guy in the new Star Wars film, and I think there was a letdown. I think he had a thing where there probably were some lines cut out, and I think after he probably saw the film at the premiere, he was like, 90% of my lines were cut out. But there was still at least one conversation where he does speak.
Because they really there was a trend towards casting British actors as Jedi. There always has been a trend towards it. If you think, what's his face?
Yeah, that one.
Old Ben, original Obi-Wan.
Alec Guinness. Yes. Ooh, there.
All of them other than Anakin in the prequels.
Yeah. Ewan McGregor. Liam Neeson wasn't, but he...
He's Irish. Did he put on enough?
Yeah. Did he put on the British or the Irish accent?
Liam Neeson doesn't have a particularly strong Irish accent. And I'm not sure which... For our American listeners, there are two distinct types of Irish. There are people from the Republic of Ireland who aren't British and people from Ireland who kind of are British.
Northern Ireland.
It's a very complicated history that we're not going to get into. I'm not sure if Liam Neeson is British, but he's British adjacent.
Yes.
He's from our part of the world.
I think the main thing is he does a British accent in the film.
He doesn't have the most profound Irish accent anyway, does he?
Yeah, but I remember him giving lines, Obi-Wan being like, let's just leave the boy here on this slave planet. And I vaguely remember Qui-Gon being like, we can't do that. And I just look at the can't. He didn't say can't. He said can. I think that's...
And then Daisy Ridley?
Definitely British accent. I don't know if she is.
She's English, yes. Yeah. She's distinctly English. And then John Boyega?
British, yep.
He was teed up to be Force-sensitive and to be a Jedi, wasn't he? That's what he was sort of promised.
And then they did fucking nothing with his character.
Yeah, he was totally promised that he would like get a lightsaber and robes, wasn't
he? Yeah, and I'm fine that they didn't do that, but they didn't do anything else. I don't, the fake out in that first film was probably one of the only interesting things about that film.
Yeah, because
the rest of it is just episode four again. But yeah, he was teed up as that. As you say, they had him in the trailer holding the lightsaber, and then he turned out Rey was, and that was a cool fake out. And then after that, he had this weird trip to a casino in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
And then Rise of the Skywalker. His plot in that was literally just, Rey, I have to tell you something, but not right now. And they never get to it.
And
that's his whole thing.
Was it him where there was like this undercurrent sexual tension between him and Oscar Isaac's character, Poe?
Yeah. To say it's presented in the film or if it's just fans shipping them is debatable.
Yeah. But again,
they certainly have a relationship of like some kind, but whether it's just platonic or not.
But no, so Darth Maul for me, I didn't know much about Darth Maul. It was weird for me seeing his interior dialogue.
Mm.
Not biggest fan of that storytelling medium anyway, am I? We know
yes.
this.
Yeah, that is a crutch that a lot of comic book writers use.
And it just felt weird with a character as demonic as Darth Maul, who, to be honest with you, I would, you know, in terms of like a narrative voice for him and a way to voice him, I wouldn't know how to voice him. And I certainly wouldn't know how to make him read as distinct on the page. And so his interior monologue ends up coming off as so bland to me. Mm. It could literally be anybody thinking and saying these things. And so I just thought it was all a bit wet, mate. I'm going to be honest with you. It was just a bit wet.
Yeah, I agree with you on the dialogue and the narrative dialogue. It definitely wasn't unique to him.
No.
I guess I wasn't as concerned as much. Like, I agree with you. I didn't notice as much because I had his voice from the Clone Wars,
right,
which is surprisingly eloquent and British, even, actually.
So is that the same bloke?
No, different actor. But yeah, different actor for Clone Wars. But he voices it in a more, again, like a villainy, like a smart, sophisticated villain kind of way.
Yes.
But he still has his moments of like, he'll let the rage out every once in a while. But yeah, so it wasn't a stretch for me. I had a different preconceived notion going into this than you did, which is purely dependent on what you've seen and consumed.
So I think Darth Maul is underutilized. I think because of the way the prequels ran, they needed to get him out of the way to show Sidious really getting his hands into Anakin, right?
Yes.
And so he's only really present for that first film, isn't he?
Oh yeah, in the film series, yeah.
And so I don't think he's a great character to try and bootstrap titles from, purely because of that reason. Because, you know, you give us a Darth Vader comic, and Darth Vader has such a rich lore attached to him, and we know Vader, and we know Anakin, and we know his story really well, and it's really easy to invest. Whereas, I mean, the one thing I did like about this comic is that it cut to the chase really quickly.
Mm.
It was a very, very brief, like, maybe page or two pages before we were dropped into the action.
Yeah.
There was no real establishing of characters. There was not, you know, they didn't feel the need to labor establishing this story. They just dropped us in it. I went, there you go, have fun. Mm. Darth Maul swinging a lightsaber around. And you're like, cool, okay, I can get behind that, and there's some fun action in it. But I didn't feel that the core concept, the core rumination of the comic book was very strong. Mm. Like, the core thing that it was saying to me is that the Sith are lawful evil and he doesn't want to embrace chaos. And I just didn't think it was that interesting.
Yeah, I see what your point. I see what you mean there. I think I definitely had different expectations coming into this, just it being a Star Wars. I don't think any Star Wars is anything close to what you could call deep.
No, so, but this wanted to be. This desperately wanted to be.
I don't know if it did or not. If it was doing more of a comic book thing than a Star Wars thing. Like, as you said earlier, like, comic books have this narrative running along. And I get, like, the whole chaos versus order thing.
Yeah.
I think that was less of a meaning or metaphor or anything like that. Or even trying to say anything. I think it was literally more of a, how do we position someone against, as an enemy of the Sith? Like, what qualities can we use to oppose them? And they just went, well, the Sith want control. And actually, technically, so did the Jedi, in a way. So what if these ones are chaos? And also, like, a very, not, I won't say lazy, but just, like, a quick hand, like, oh, who's, like, a villain who is like that? Joker from Dark Knight. He's, like, chaos. Like, that's his thing. We could do that with them. I agree with what you're saying. I definitely did not have the expectation, so it didn't affect me as much. For me, going into it, I was more enjoying the, oh, it's like Star Wars, but horror-themed, like, yeah, horror version. And for some reason, I don't know why, I just like when Star Wars does different stuff.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is the thing. We're so used to adventure stories centered around Star Wars, aren't we?
Yeah. I like when they do anything really, not Jedi-focused.
I didn't really read it as a horror, though, if I'm honest with you.
I read it in a kind of, like, a Dead Space. Like, it definitely rung a lot true to that.
Okay.
Like, abandoned ship, what's happened here, that kind of stuff. It's very psychological horror. And there is gore, but it's done in a way where the art is, by the way, I should say, the reason it's called red, white, and black is those are the only colors used in it. And I did find that was an interesting aspect as well, especially for the other two we read being just normal kind of basic colors. I like the line work in one of them a bit better, which we'll get to. But this one was just more interesting, more kind of eye-catching. I like that, again, the red was used for Darth Maul specifically to signify him, especially in the comic, and also any gore or blood was just red without showing direct blood. So keeping it kind of PG, but still showing a bit of gore, light gore, I'd say.
Yeah, and it does look cool, doesn't it?
I like the look of it, and I had fun with it, again, because I went in with low expectations, it being Star Wars. And it's not because, again, not because I don't like Star Wars, it's that I do not even bother looking for any deep or meaning stuff in Star Wars.
Although I resent the idea of this being only black, white, and grey, though.
Black, white, and red.
Black, white, and red, yeah, because there's grayscale in there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, black and, to say black and white is kind of a cheat code for, like, well, you get grayscale in there as well.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But other than that, I thought it was fun. I had my biggest issue with any of these in this, though, which is ironic because it's the one I enjoyed the most as well. So you're saying about the first couple pages, it's him and Sidious. Sidious is just telling him, hey, here's the thing. Here's what we need you to do, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And immediately I found this more interesting because the other two, which we're going to get into, are very much a, here's a MacGuffin we need you to retrieve/save, right?
Yes.
They're those two, reading those two stories back to back, I was like, these are very similar stories.
Oh, absolutely.
So getting to this one third in the order I read them, I was like, okay, this is a bit different. I like this. I like the art style. It's very interesting. Like, and again, to the other two tiles I just read.
Yeah.
Then it does this thing. So Sidious tells Darth Maul all about what he needs him to do, who these people are, very quick. Like, here's the mission briefing. I need you to go and sort them out for me, basically. Mm-hmm. And Sidious says something along the lines of, I need a weapon that's sharp and focused and, you know, will not be distracted. Something, I'm mad-libbing. He says something like that. And Darth Maul goes something, says something like, well, that's good because, and he goes, he says, I am such a weapon, right?
Yeah.
And right. He says it not only while posing like a fucking Power Ranger while he's saying it, but he also fires up his lightsaber, his dual-wielding lightsaber, indoors. For no reason to pose with it while standing in front of it was the dumbest single panel I think panel. I've ever seen. Splash panel?
You love a splash panel.
Yeah. I like a good splash panel. And this wasn't even a splash panel. It was like the last third.
Yeah.
But it's literally, it was the most embarrassing. I was embarrassed for Maul. I was like, what are you doing?
Mm.
Like, your boss, who you kind of fear, because you know how powerful he is giving you, it's like being in a meeting with a boss who could fire you at any second if you, like, say or do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of level of, and it's, you know, instead of being fired, it's your life. Like, yeah. He'll kill you. You're in a meeting with him. It's so out of character for Maul. He goes, he says a really cheesy line, and I can excuse a cheesy line by itself, because again, it's Star Wars.
You know, like, what it reminds me of? There's that vine of that kid who's like, I've got the power of God and anime on my side. And then he like poses.
Maul literally does that. Sidious goes, I need this kind of weapon. And Maul, if he had just been straight-faced and not made any move and just said, well, I am such a weapon. Mm. I would have been like, fine. I don't even register as cheesy because it's Star Wars. Like, it's Star Wars dialogue. We're flooded in it. You don't notice it. But then he strikes a pose and he lights his lightsaber. It's like, you're in a meeting room. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's like opening your umbrella in the fucking kitchen. Like, what are you doing?
I mean, that is comic book shit though, isn't it?
But it's one such egregious panel. And everything else I thought was like a cool vibe. Like, the rest of this comic I thought was like just cool. Like, I enjoyed it for what it was. But there was just one bit. I was at the point of like writing to this Benjamin Percy, be like, why did you do this? Why did you do this one panel?
Ben, if you're listening, this is really, like, I can tell when something's rattled Ryan.
I'm getting red. Yeah, I'm turning to Maul.
This has really rattled him. So if you are listening, Benjamin, or if you happen to know Benjamin, or if you're just a listener who would like to get answers for us, a Percy.
Mm. I knew a cat called Percy once. Anyway, doesn't matter. But yeah, if you're a Benjamin or a Percy, or one of the two, his surname is Percy.
Oh, right. Fuck me. I was just baffled for a moment there. Can we just tweet this at him? Because Ryan needs to know. Ryan needs answers. I can see it in his eyes.
I don't want to be a dick to be like, hey, I liked your work, but I hated this one panel. Like,
no,
but I did. I hated that one panel.
He needs to know. He needs to know about
They'll
this.
Never learn if you don't tell them. And the only other thing was, again, I liked it. I liked the vibe. I liked the creepiness. I especially liked the creepy characters. Like, again, for Star Wars, it's so rare for them to go this hardcore. It kind of reminded me of, very quick tangent. I saw recently what the original design of Voldemort was meant to be for Harry Potter, based on the books. I have no recollection. I read all the books as a kid. I have no recollection of like what he was meant to look like, even though they must have described him in there.
Yeah.
But then I saw this character model based on the book, and it's like proper, like, venom teeth, but snake eyes, like proper, like dark.
Yeah, he was
snake
meant to be serpentine, wasn't he?
Yeah, and like a long tongue. It looked like kind of Carnage venom-ish, but like way creepier because it was on like a proper human body. Yeah. And then they just went with Ralph Fiennes without a nose. But so it seemed,
which, to be honest with you, is actually a pretty good compromise.
Yeah, and what the point I'm kind of making is, like with that, and like with this, with Star Wars, I think if this was in like a proper 18-rated horror kind of thing, like people being like, this is scary, and you saw these kind of characters, you'd be like, nah, not really. Like, looks like it's meant to be creepy, but eh. But when it's a juxtaposition of being in the PG universe of Star Wars, and then you get this suddenly like creepy looking thing, you're like, ugh.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
It hits you hard. You go, oh, well, that's out of place, isn't it? So So that's why I kind of got with these. I was like, this is Star Wars, but they're kind of creepy looking. So
Do you keep reading?
Yeah, I would. Especially knowing it's a mini series. I think it's only 4, maybe 5 issues. I would absolutely I probably will finish this. Just again, just for the vibe, not for the great story. I'm not expected to be blown away by twists or character motivations. I just want to see Darth Maul fucking shit up.
Yeah, but the vibe got you.
Yes, exactly.
So the other two.
Yes. Which one do you want to do next?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think either of them warrants being talked about alone, if I'm being completely honest.
Really? I had a little more stuff with Mace Windu than
They are both classic. They are both bog standard Star Wars stories. They're just adventure comics.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And there is a MacGuffin-focused story that is very samey in both of them, isn't it?
However, there are a few things that I want to talk about with the Boba Fett one.
Okay.
So we should probably start there.
Jango Fett.
Jango Fett.
So, please, Boba Fett's my son. Call me Jango.
So the dialogue here was piss weak.
Well, speaking of that, the writer was Ethan Sachs, artist Lou Cross, color artist Nolan Woodard. So what do you think of the dialogue?
Well, I mean, so basically Jango Fett is sent to get a MacGuffin, right? That's essentially the crux of the story.
Yes, exactly. Hired as a bounty hunter rather than commanded like the Jedi Mace Windu.
Yeah. So he's hired to be a bounty hunter because that's his jam. He's a bounty hunter.
Yes.
And he's hired to go and trace these people that have thieved a sculpture that is important to maintain planetary peace, essentially. But there is a moment where another bounty hunter catches up to him. And bear in mind, this is a cook-off. And so multiple bounty hunters have been given this same bounty.
Yep.
And one of them walks up to him and says, "This bounty just isn't big enough for the both of us." That's a fucking John Wayne ripoff.
So I kind of actually, I know what you mean.
No, you cannot defend that. It's piss poor.
I enjoyed the bold-faced parody of Westerns of within this because I liked the, again, most of it was just bang average, like standard comic book adventure stuff, right?
Yeah.
I liked that you had this character. So there was another bounty hunter who the joke is, it's actually a really small person. I was like, that's fun because most bounty hunters in Star Wars are armored guys or massive Chewbaccas or like, you know,
I thought the dinky dude was in the Mace Windu comic.
Oh, yes. No, he was. Wait, was he? Yes, he was. Yes.
These comics, Ryan, are so nondescript.
It's why I said I liked the Darth Maul one, because it was at least like...
And there's also just these moments. So we meet the Duskweavers.
Yeah, I was thinking of Yaya from the Mace Windu one.
Yeah. So we meet the Duskweavers.
Yes.
And they, I mean, again, it's just pure expositional content. "We are Duskweavers of Haldor Path. We do not taint our hearts and minds with the abominations of science and their so-called progress." It's like...
That's Mace Windu, isn't it?
Is that...
I think it is, yeah. So yeah, these Mace Windu and Jango Fett ones are very similar.
It is. Yeah, so essentially, but again, my point stands that the dialogue the dialogue in the Jango one annoyed me more.
Yeah. I liked the part where, I liked that it was a bit dumb, in the sense that there's a part where he's grabbing a target and he's going to use his jetpack to go out the skylight, basically.
Also, do you know enough about the Star Wars universe to be able to tell from any kind of transitory clues as to when the Jango Fett one is set?
It's pre-episode 2.
Pre-episode 2. Because... And this is a little thing, but it is interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
That is clearly a droid that is based off C-3PO.
Yeah, similar design.
But Anakin designed C-3PO.
So the way to think of it is, because this has come up a lot, Anakin didn't design him from scratch. He built an existing model of robot, but he built him in the same way that you could build a car, but you would get the parts to build and model of car.
I always assumed that what was so interesting about C-3PO is that Anakin had designed him.
No, not designed. Like, right, it's, okay. Think of it like this way. There's like a skeletal like design,
and totally.
He's obviously added on top of it.
Yeah.
The weird thing about it is, how come Anakin created C-3PO and then somewhere along the lines he gains, and this is like Rise of the Skywalker bollocks spoilers, but it's shit, so it doesn't matter. How did he get this ancient Sith language translation that he had to reset himself to be able to access? Why did young boy, innocent boy Anakin put ancient Sith language in his database and then like lock it away from him or something? And if it wasn't him, why would evil Anakin do that? Because why would you put it in something and then throw out into the world?
Yeah, totally.
It was the most that's the worst Star Wars film, I think.
But no, so the Jango Fett one.
Yes.
I think the one thing I will say for it is that even though the dialogue's piss weak, I got a sense of Jango's voice.
Yep. New Zealand. Yep. Yeah. I mean, the actor who plays him is, and he just did his accent. And so him and all the clones have a New Zealand tinge accent. Yeah,
interesting. But no, his dialogue, at least, was distinct enough that I really got a sense of him as a character.
Yeah.
And so I liked that element of it. But again, to be honest with you, I kind of feel like if you want this kind of story, Mandalorian has already done a bunch of it on telly.
Yeah, better. And a better job, absolutely.
It feels like a watered-down version of The Mandalorian to me. Yeah.
I should state, when I say I like anything in these comics, like I probably will read more Darth Maul. With these ones, if I say I like it, I mean I like it in the sense of like I'm reading it and I enjoyed a line, I will never come back to this again. Like, that's the level I'm talking about.
I felt super let down by it because the Darth Vader stuff that we read was fucking fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Written by, I can't remember their name off the top of my head, but I do remember that was a established comic book writer who I'd read other great stuff from. So that was a great writer who'd been given a great title and an established character and just hit a home run with it.
But again,
Kieran Gillen was his name. That's the one. Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just because we've come out all of these really early in their runs. But again, with the Darth Maul one, I've read a quarter of what's going to exist. And I don't know if the Mace Windu and the Jango Fett are limited runs or if they're going to be full titles with, you know, whole volumes attached to them.
I'd say they probably depend on their success. So here's the thing, which I think I'm going to give you what I think is the reason why it is, right? We've read Star Wars comics based on either them being highly rated and recommended or because it was like a very specific thing, like with, can't remember her name, but the alien Jedi who was in
Ahsoka.
Yes,
whereas the commonality here is that they're all recent
new. Yes, they're early runs. The ones that have been going on for longer, I like, their big titles that are going on right now are Star Wars the comic and Darth Vader the comic.
Yeah.
I would treat those within this microcosm of Marvel comics as like Spider-Man and X-Men or Batman and Superman. That's
no,
their
I
ones
hear
they're
what
like
you're saying.
Who's the best, you're on this one. But then they're like, well, other people would like to write Star Wars, so we'll churn out. I think this is the contentification of, you know, this kind of stuff. It's like, let's just churn, like, of Marvel comics already doing, DC comics already, that they've been doing it for decades. This is, let's churn stuff out and see if anything gets picked up. And it is just very samey.
Absolutely. I mean, so Mace Windu was vaguely interesting, I suppose, but I like Jedi content.
Yeah.
I like Jedi content.
I actually prefer the non-Jedi stuff now. I feel like I was oversaturated with it with being such a main focus in all the main films. Like, I like when it's non-Jedi.
Yeah, it's central.
Yes. But that's why I like it when it gets non-Jedi, because it makes it feel like this bigger, wider universe where other stuff's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm loving The Bad Batch right now. And The Mandalorian, for the same reason. It's
it's
mostly non-Jedi stuff. Obviously, you got Baby Yoda in there and stuff. But yeah, anytime it's non-Jedi, I'm like, this is a universe that people know. Like, one of the most well-known fictional universes. Maybe more so now, only because of recently, than like bloody Middle Earth. But only because there's in the last 10, 20 years, there's been all this extra stuff that's like fleshened it out and defined it more. So when you see these corners where other stuff happens, like a bit in The Mandalorian, one of my favorite episodes in The Mandalorian is about reforming all Empire workers.
Yeah.
And they're fitting into the new world, like the post-Empire world.
Yeah.
And it feels like people who worked for an evil Empire beforehand, it's like, right, you didn't believe in the Empire. You were working for it because they were, you know, it worked for them or die. So we're going to rehabilitate you into the new world. And then this whole subplot about the new Empire is actually still existing and stirring up and stuff. I loved all that stuff because it made this fantastical universe give it like a real sense of realism, like its base.
So is that why you think maybe the Maul stuff kind of got you more?
Yeah, because it was just another aspect. Then it became this more fantastical horror element, which we hadn't seen before.
It's a shame because I've enjoyed all of the Star Wars comics we've read. I really liked Vader. I enjoyed the stuff that we, the Clone Wars stuff that we read with Ahsoka in it. I thought, you know, the Obi-Wan Anakin relationship was really well portrayed there, and I thought it was written well and it looked good. But yeah, a lot of this stuff just left me feeling flat, and it's a shame because I know we say, oh well, you know, they're just churning this stuff out and it's there to make money, and that is what it is. But it's artistic expression and these are stories. And if you're going to churn this stuff out, you might as well make an effort to make it good. And it doesn't feel like every effort was made to make these things good.
Yeah, I think it's more in the sense of all we can do is just call them out for what they are.
Yeah.
Extremely mid, uninspired for the most part. Again, the more one, regardless of what you think of it, I think anyone could objectively look and I go, well, they're trying to do something different with this one.
Like, yeah, and you know what? On reflection, having read and talked about and thought about all three now, the more one is the most interesting of the three, isn't
yeah.
It absolutely is. Even though I found it, I don't remember what my descriptive was.
I think you're a bit boring or uninspired in the dialogue and motivation specifically.
Yeah, but nowhere near as flaccid as the other two.
No. And the thing with the other two is, and I'll get this out of the way just so it's what's interesting is, so the other one, the Mace Windu comic, was actually written by a guy called Mark Bernardin.
Right.
He is I don't know if it's still going, he was the co-host of the Kevin Smith podcast, Fat Man on Batman.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. So yeah, I've
listened to that guy. He's really interesting.
He's written this. And a little interesting at points, like I said, I've got some stuff I liked about it. But overall, yeah, kind of middle of the road.
What did you like about it?
So quickly, I had these notes on Jango Fett. I just liked there was a lot of puns in the Jango Fett one, which, and not even just puns, but like a joke that I genuinely enjoyed.
So
I'm going back to Jango Fett just because I didn't get a chance to point out the jokes I liked in it.
Your obsession with structure has just made you completely ruin the flow of the podcast.
Yeah, you didn't give me a chance to talk about Jango Fett.
I will get
my piece in.
Let's go.
So Jango Fett, at one point, he's rocking out of the skylight with the bounty. Bounty goes, we're going to die. And Jango Fett goes, I'll be fine. I've got armor.
Yes.
And I like that as a line. And then the next two panels, he drops a thermal grenade. Yeah. And the two panels literally bounces. And the guy, one of the aliens goes, is that? And then the next panel, thermal grenade? And I just like the layer of that. I was like, that's fun.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good joke. And there was a bunch of card puns. When the guy's been catched like a Saturday morning cartoon villain.
Yes.
He's like, I've stacked the odds in my favor and that kind of stuff. And I was like, you're so cringe. Like, you're so hokey. But I thought I laughed, I suppose, at how bad it was in that sense.
Yeah.
But again, I had zero expectations going into it. There was also one of the guys had the flexibility to do a split kick, where his one foot was on the floor and the other one was 180 degrees up when he kicked a character. And I was like, that's unnecessarily flexible for a bounty hunter. Maybe it's a Star Wars thing. Maybe they have like space yoga, which makes people like incredibly flexible or something. But it's odd that like the artist went through that level. Like, you know, characters do like big high kicks.
Yeah.
They're normally not like the groin and thighs are like 180 degrees. Like if he was doing a handstand as well, you could eat dinner like off of, like he's so flat. You could put spirit level on him and it would be perfect.
Yeah, and that's a very high level of athleticism that would get you there.
But the main point I'm getting across is there was not much more interesting stuff.
That
as a default, I gravitate towards these little details that don't mean anything.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
The main point I'm making is like, I'm looking at, that guy's like doing a proper 180 degree split kick instead of like, who's this character? What are they doing?
So I have played in D&D campaigns that have ended up having richer stories than these two comic books. And that's I think, quite poignant because these are exactly the type of stories you would get in a D&D campaign. You have been hired to go and retrieve a MacGuffin.
Yes.
That's D&D shit. These stories feel like something that you would throw together for a beginner's D&D campaign, you know?
Yeah.
And so Mace Windu is the rogue. No, Mace Windu is the fighter or the monk, and Jango Fett is a rogue, and that is how they approach these situations. You have a MacGuffin to go and get, they go and get the MacGuffin. There's not a lot else going on here.
No. And I think when you come down to asking why, like, again, contentification of this, of these and other kind of franchises,
yeah.
I think what you've got is you've got people who want to write Star Wars stories. But when it comes down to it, because it wasn't as much of like a inspired, like, oh my God, I have this great idea for a story. It's, I've got the chance to write for Star Wars. I need to put a story together.
Yeah.
So when it's a story by requirement, and I think, you know, neither of us have really written anything ever, like not properly. I think when you're pressed with that, it's a lot easier said than done to not fall on the same tropes and plot points and stuff like that.
And again, I imagine that there was budgets and timescales and stuff.
Mm.
But it all just feels a bit corporate.
Yeah, it is. Star Wars is Disney. Like, it's the most corporate thing.
Yeah.
The best Star Wars for me is when it's so good that it makes me forget for a second that it's corporate franchise. That's the barometer.
But I suppose it's interesting because the original trilogy was, although it was a huge production, it was a plucky production centered around one, albeit very weird dude who didn't have great taste and didn't have, you know, George Lucas was notoriously not very good at making creative decisions. And actually, his original cuts of Star Wars were completely altered by his wife, weren't they?
I was about to say, it's his wife who saved the first film, really.
It's his wife who really did the editing and did the hard work there. But it was a plucky production and it was an interesting concept. And it was a little bit unhinged.
Yeah.
Like, for the cinematic landscape of the 1970s, Star Wars was this kind of interesting, different thing. And that's why people cottoned onto it so much. And that's what people found in it that they liked. And now it's owned by Disney and they're just churning out content in every medium possible.
Yeah.
Comic books, TV, novels, movies. It just, there's a sterility to all three of these titles that makes me really sad because I fucking like Star Wars.
Yeah, but I think Star Wars has always been this kind of storytelling. Like, it's never been deep. It's never been particularly complex. The reason I think those early Star Wars are so well received or thought of, one is nostalgia, I think.
Mm.
I think, two, like, at the time, it seemed new and amazing, but what it really did was set the template, but maybe because of its own success, for what everything was going to be like afterwards.
Yeah.
Everything wanted to be Star Wars after the success of Star Wars.
There is a quiet profundity to the first Star Wars films, though. I think there's a quiet profundity in, what, the 1970s, creating a story about Empire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was taken from, one could argue, as we've addressed before, that might be the aspect of which was borrowed from Dune, in a way.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. But he, you know, he was making a film series about an evil empire at a time where a lot of people in the English-speaking world would have still...
Vietnam.
Pardon?
Vietnam. Like, the whole Vietnam, like, America being the evil empire, invading other, like, well, that was the inspiration, wasn't it?
I was thinking, well, potentially, but I was thinking more of the British Empire. And the fact that the British Empire was still more fondly thought of back then.
What, in the 70s? Like...
Yeah, historiographically, people didn't start shouting about the atrocities of Empire until a little while later than that.
Yeah, I thought it was more Vietnam. Like, that era.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. You know, an anti-war film.
Because the rebels were literally, essentially, the Viet Cong.
Like. Well, yeah, kind of. And then you look at the tactics used by the what they call the Ewoks.
Yes, yeah, literally the Viet Cong.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, you know, that punches really hard, doesn't it? And then,
but there was that the highest level, and like by today's comparisons, that's not much, is it? Like,
no, vague.
Connection to an existing political thing is like now the bare minimum for something to be considered good, like that level of thought.
Well, it's a standard, isn't it?
Yes. And again, the standard is set by Star Wars. So at the time, maybe it was great, like for that, because not much else did that kind of thing, especially not in the mainstream. Now, again, it set the process. I think these days, the thing is with commodification of all franchises, it's something original, like plucky, indie. Whatever, like a real heartfelt made, regardless of, you know, whether it's deep or not, made with real earnest and heartfelt enjoyment, like actually make something. And then that thing becomes successful and then it gets bought by a big corporation and then they charge you for the nostalgia of it for the rest, for yours and your family's generations for the rest of their lives. Like, that's the cycle, isn't it?
That's a sad fucking look into the way the world works, isn't it?
But then those things get boring and stale, like, as we are seeing now, and then new things take their place, and that's the cycle, isn't it? Things get successful, then they become, was it either die a hero or become the villain, like the things that are new and edgy become in ways, if they're successful, then they become the establishment, and then things, new things, are then rallying against them, and just the cycle of it all, isn't it?
And I think what we're really seeing here is the late stage of Disney-owned Star Wars, because they've had their MCU moment with it now. They've had the opportunity to wring every last penny out of an interconnected cinematic universe with it, with the most recent trilogy of films, and with all the TV shows that they've been making. And so what we're seeing here is sort of, say it, but the dregs. The dregs of Disney-owned Star Wars. And it worries me, because I really love Star Wars.
I should say, I don't think this is a new thing. I don't think this is, like, we, from our perspective, we read Darth Vader from 2017 and, like, the Clone Wars related comics, and now we're reading this. So from our perspective, it looks like it's got worse. I think this, what we've read here, has always existed. We don't hear about it. We wouldn't have done these if it wasn't Star Wargishborg.
Yeah.
And then we would never have even looked at it.
I think if you'd given me these to read, any one of these for a whole episode, I'd have come back to you and said, Ryan, there's not enough here.
Yeah.
There is not enough for us to talk about. There's nothing interesting here. This is sterile.
Yeah.
And again, it's not bad. It's perfectly fine. And do you know what? If I was in a fucking WH Smiths about to get on a flight to Amsterdam, if I was about to fly from London to Amsterdam, what, an hour, and I saw any one of these in paperback on the rack in WH Smiths, I'd pick it up and I'd hand over my £5 and I'd read it for the duration of my flight and go, wow, that was better than watching half an episode of Top Gear.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wouldn't be mad if I read any of these on a bus stop or a train journey.
Yeah.
You know, and I suppose that's kind of what they're for, right? Like, that's...
It depends on the levels, because again, there's varying levels of quality. Like, again, the Darth Vader from 2017 we read, at that time, there were a bunch of titles released. You only hear now about the Vader comic and the Star Wars mainline comic.
Yeah.
Those were the two best, right. And those were the ones. So this stuff's always existed. Like, if anything's a franchise, like, and this was the bewilderment that I had with Fallout. There was, for anyone who didn't listen, there was one Fallout comic in existence. Like, only one. And it was crazy to us, me especially, that Bethesda, who owned the Fallout franchise, have not made more comics, because it's just such an easy money grab. You just literally put the... And again, it's the most capitalistic way of thinking.
But this is what it would have been. It would have been sterile.
Yeah, and exactly. And I'm not saying they should have, from a creative point of view. I'm purely talking cold capitalistic finance. Why didn't they do that?
I just can't help but feel, and again, I'm becoming more and more attached to the graphic novel as an art form throughout, you know, just doing this with you, right? I read a bunch of them every week. And I can't help but wonder if shit like this is actually diluting the medium.
I mean, yeah, comics, the whole comic medium has been diluted since the 60s.
I suppose by its nature, it's quite dilute.
Yes. The thing that I love about comics is also probably its biggest detriment.
Mm.
It's the low requirement to do it.
The
right?
low barrier to entry.
Yeah, low barrier to entry. The only one lower than comics is books, because one person write a book. One person can make a comic if they can, but they just need to write and draw.
Yeah.
So it's the second lowest bar to entry, just above books, right? But because of that, you get everything.
Do you know what's interesting though? Books need to be sold and produced in much higher quantities to be profitable, because you're physically printing more pages.
Yeah.
And you don't release a new chapter of a book every week that you can sell individually. So how much is a comic? A comic book costs like what? A
five? Like £5-ish.
So a book in paperback costs a tenner and it's a whole product. To get the same amount of content from a comic book as you do a book, you need to buy about 50 or 60 quid's worth of the fuckers.
Yeah, you would get a cheaper deal on a graphic novel once the issues are all released. Yeah. That's about 40 quid, I'd say.
But the barrier to entry is almost higher for books, because it's harder to get published.
Yeah.
Because you have to have something, to be honest with you, for a publisher to even look at you in 2024, you have to have something fucking special.
Also, a lot of bollocks still gets made, though, doesn't it?
A lot of really not great books get printed, yes. But in terms of fiction, like, you have to have a really polished product to get a book in print these days. To get a book published in print, you have to have a really polished product. And there is a trend towards novels getting longer, blah, 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 blah. But I think...
There's also a lot of ebooks being made now, that like, self-published, and that's kind of diluting that market, isn't there?
Yeah, but I don't know many readers... And again, most of the bibliophiles I know are still going into Waterstones and smelling the books.
Mm.
We're an odd bunch, you know, in terms of the way that we consume content.
Yeah.
Like, bibliophiles are an odd bunch.
You're not on Kindles yet.
I know a few people who read on Kindles, but...
And they're cast out as heathens.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. But I get it, and I do understand that. And there's something fun about thinking critically about a medium that on some level is the lowest common denominator,
yeah.
Right? But yeah. Also it means that sometimes we end up talking about stuff like this that is just wholly uninspiring.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, as I said, this is the current state of Star Wars comics as they are right now.
Yeah.
And what's more important, I think, is we're kind of heroes if you think about it, right? We're doing the service of reading this boring dredge and then coming out and saying, hey, Disney and Marvel are churning out a lot of mid-grey bollocks.
Yeah.
Like, that's important to say, because when they are, like, such highly regarded franchises, like, people fucking, as we say now, love Star Wars.
Yeah, people are, I mean, yeah. Yeah, the old school nerds as well, like the Gen X nerds and the millennial nerds fucking live for this
Which is probably why, we've mentioned this, I think, in the original Star Wars episode we did, I think, about Vader, was we had this thing where we were like, if someone asked if we were a Star Wars fan, we'd say, no, not really.
Yeah.
But we'd be like, oh, no, I've seen the films and I've seen some of the TV shows and I've now read some of the comics and I've played a lot of the games and I know a lot what happens in the old Legends series because of stuff like this too.
Exactly.
And then you're like, fuck, I think I'm a fan.
Yeah.
But the reason we're so careful to be like, to acknowledge that is because people really love it.
Mm.
And when people love franchises like these, it's important, I think, for someone to say, hey, you know, they're just churning out a lot of bollocks for like not no reason, for financial gain, but they're just churning out a lot of bollocks uninspired for no reason.
Who's buying this crap in hard copy, though? That's what I want to know. I want to know who's actually going into comic book stores and saying, oh, I'm really excited for the new Jango Fett comic.
Kids, probably, most likely. But that's the thing is, I think like digital
sales. Is this for kids?
I don't think so. It's PG enough they can be sold to kids.
Because I would be less angry at it if it was explicitly marketed to children, because then I can forgive it being so simple, because I'm like, oh, well, there's, you know, children's literature needs to be simple because you're teaching brains that aren't fully developed about how stories work. And so simplicity then becomes a beneficial trait in children's literature.
I think the reason it comes across so kind of middle of the road in that regard is because they're not trying to limit themselves to any one market.
No, so, which means that everyone can be bored by it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. and that's not just across ages and like adult to kid content. That's every aspect.
Mm.
It's like, how much of an adventure is it? How unique is the story? Oh, how like same old tropes are being used. Like it's like pop music. It's why pop music is short for pop, because it's the most popular amongst the most common, the highest common denominator across everyone. Like that's what this stuff is striving for. Lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
So don't make anyone think, oh, this is a bit weird. I don't like it. You want that response from the least amount of people who could be interested in this kind of thing. That's what they're going for.
Yeah, I just find it just so boring.
Also, we've wasted time. We haven't barely talked about Mace Windu, and I feel like it'd be unfair to not discuss him.
I mean, what is there to say about it?
I like the blue lava. That was cool. Like, look, I thought the art was good in Mace Windu.
I mean, it was fine. No, there was some jank, man. Mace Windu didn't look good.
There was jank.
He certainly didn't look like Samuel L. Jackson.
No, and I don't think it was meant to be entirely. He looked more like his Clone Wars character.
Right, okay, cool, fine.
But I like the extra, like, I know what you mean about jank. I don't think it was going for that level of realism.
Yeah.
I think when you've got characters that are like fish heads and or weird ones, it's like, well, the humans are going to look kind of weird anyway. Like, if you look at Clone Wars models, some of those characters, Buddy Darth, what's his name? After Maul, before Vader, Darth, it wasn't Sidious. It was the guy played by the old British guy.
Yeah. Darth, Garth Ennis. Darth. Oh, fuck, yeah.
I've got Sidious stuck in my head now.
Darth Tyrannus. Count Dooku.
Count Dooku, yeah. We thought it was Darth for some reason.
Well, no, but he is. He's Darth Tyrannus and Count Dooku.
We all know him as Dooku.
Yeah, because he has a political title as well, because we don't actually know he's a Sith, do we?
I should have remembered from the quote.
Should
have remembered from everyone being like, Count Dooku.
Yeah, he's like, I think Just as a side note, by the way.
Yeah.
I think that General Grievous was the best antagonist of the prequels.
He was underutilized. Because he was just a general. Like, he was cooler and aesthetically. Like, he looked awesome.
He was the best protagonist. He had, like, the most memorable vote. He had the most memorable moments of any of the antagonists in the prequels.
I'm a Jedi.
Yeah, totally. And that moment where he takes his robe off, I've studied your ways, and then there's like five lightsabers going. Fucking cool.
But then he gets murked by like one single laser shot.
Yeah, no, he does. And he does die quite tragically. But then again...
Another character far more fleshed out in the Clone Wars.
Count Dooku just fully gets executed by Anakin without any ceremony.
Yeah, yes, but that's because it's a key plot point. Because that's Sidious being like, yes, do it, feel the hate. Like, that's... His death serves that massive plot point.
Yeah, but even so, he's just wet.
Nah, he fights Yoda. Like, Yoda's pretty powerful, and Dooku's like, they... blow for blow, force-wise and lightsaber. The thing Dooku I was going to point out was in the Clone Wars, Dooku's head is like a baguette. Like, it's shaped like a baguette. Like, it's long and thin. Like,
oh.
Yeah. It's cut. It looks like, you know, because that was just the style of the Clone Wars. Like, the 3D.
Not human.
No. Like, you know, caricatures. Like, the people who draw people on the beach.
I'm aware of what a caricature is.
I didn't know if I was right in that. Like, I know word caricature.
Sorry, I know what you mean.
Is that the one where they have the big heads and the little bodies and caricature specifically?
That's a style of caricature,
So you know that one. It looks really fucked up. Like, that's kind of what they went for.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, I get it. Oh, I kind of like it.
Yeah. And to be fair, Clone Wars, I think, was aimed for kids. But as the series went on, and the stories were very simple by the numbers... But as it went on, the writing became like deeper and deeper and more like intertwined across episodes and series.
Yeah.
And then by the end, the last season is the best Star Wars I've ever seen. So back to Mace Windu, because there were little parts which I liked enough that I thought I'd worth mentioning for the person who wrote to Ordura. I like the art. I like that there's extra line art. Like when it was raining, it was just all like loads of like drawn lines.
Right,
for some
reason,
I like that style. Yeah, there was jank in the faces. Absolutely. I saw that. For me, I don't think it's that close to realistic that it's an issue. It wasn't like the Spider-Man one where it was like, again, Spider-Man one was set on Earth with humans for the most part. So when a face is a different kind of shape, you're like, what's going on there?
But the two main characters here are both humanoid.
Yes, but I think it's...
And so you'd expect them to look like believable humans, and Mace Windu doesn't always.
Yeah, but it's also still that like very fantastical setting. Like...
Because a human goes into space, it doesn't mean they don't need to look like a fucking human anymore.
But they're not human.
Well, Mace Windu
They're played by humans in our world. Like, we have them played by humans in our world. But that, you know, doesn't mean like they are human and they follow the same human rules. Again, I'm excusing a bit of jank in art. I'm not denying that it's jank. I'm just saying why I didn't give a shit.
Does this then lead us down the road where we have to, where essentially the first non-white character that Star Wars gave us, we are to believe is an alien?
No, I'm saying none of these characters are human, is what I'm saying. There are no human characters in Star Wars because human doesn't exist in Star Wars. That's what I'm saying. So for to hold them to the same standard within like drawn fantastical comics.
So, well, like Obi-Wan, Anakin, they're not human.
Yeah, the human doesn't exist in Star Wars. They never use the word. Well, I don't think they ever use the word human. I could be wrong. You could find proof of it right now and prove me wrong. I don't think they've ever used the word human there.
Are they all just different alien species that look humanoid then?
Well, this is my thinking, is because if you have humanoid, so I think like there's a theory with alien stuff where humanoid is the most likely like shape of creatures because it's the most common one that it's the most advantageous to have two limbs walking on, two limbs, you know, to grab stuff with and a head up here. Like,
well, it depends on what you're up to.
Yeah, but for the most part, like, surviving.
You're chasing. I don't know. I mean, there's a pretty good argument for being quadrupedal.
Yeah, but again, it depends on, I suppose, like, the atmosphere and the terrain you're in or whatever.
Yeah.
But the main point is, I can understand, like, the shape, like, being common, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty, it's, like, the shape of the head, like, the number of eyes, like, and all that kind of stuff. Like,
But all the humanoid characters look pretty human.
Yeah, because like, especially in the 70s, if Bruce had humans.
If Obi-Wan had casually had four eyes, I'd be right there with you. I'd be like, yeah, that one probably isn't human.
Yeah, but you know full well the only reason it's not like that, the only reason the aliens are the most different looking ones is because if you were film budget, you were either making full on weird looking aliens or you were Alec Guinness. Like, those were the two options.
But we also have to read these as texts. And you are right. Him and the other protagonists talk about the planet that they're from.
Yeah.
And where they grew up. And it is a planet that isn't Earth.
Mm.
But also, I just assumed they were both human. And now I'm being told they're not. And that's baffling to me.
Yeah. I'm more going on the sense of, like, why I can forgive Jank in this setting. More right. so than, again, like, we're in the Marvel Universe, but we're in New York on Earth. And these are all humans. Like, yeah, that's the difference. For
yeah,
me.
Okay. I get it.
But again, and also it's a style thing. Like, you could use this style in like a Marvel comic and it could be a great story and everything else is great and the style just fits like the, you know, some artists draw, I mean, you've seen it in like web comics and stuff. Like, some artists draw people really fucked up looking, but they have a consistent style and it's...
Well, yeah, but again, I'm not saying like, my concern with the Jank isn't a stylistic issue though.
Right.
It's not stylistic. It's the fact that his face isn't consistent panel to panel.
Right.
That's so, why, I think you misunderstand me a lot when I say this, because I think you think I'm talking about a stylistic thing. It's not about the level of detail and realism in the face. It's the fact that it's not consistent panel to panel.
Yeah, I think...
Like, I'm not suggesting that I'm going to go, well, Peppa Pig is awful.
No.
Because the eyes are in the wrong place. The eyes are in the wrong place, but they're always in the wrong place. They're in the right wrong place every panel, right? Or every frame.
I was thinking of your example with the Spider-Man who had the really fucked up face when he got... beat in the shower.
Well, it's just like, but that was because it was a bad drawing, and the fact that Mace Windu doesn't have this, like, he doesn't look the same panel to panel here. Like, his face changes.
Is that perspective as well?
Well, yeah, but you can draw the same face from two different perspectives if you're a good artist.
I was
what
gonna
I'm
say,
saying
that,
here
that probably
is
the most difficult thing.
Yeah, no, and it's hard. But again, if you're putting out a product professionally, it needs to look good, right? Yeah, and this just doesn't look that good to me.
And to be fair, maybe that is, and I'm in agreement here, maybe that's the artistic equivalent of like churning out bulk standard stories.
Yeah,
like
totally.
Trope-y.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not expecting much from the art here because the story's flaccid.
Yes. Like, just fine. Just fine.
I mean, the fact that your like thing that you liked about it was, I like the blue lava. I'm like, yeah, that's a cool concept, but one cool idea isn't enough to...
No, exactly. Exactly
a
that.
Story.
I tell you a prime example of like what's not there, but what it wishes it was, if that makes sense. There's a part where in the beginning, Mace Windu escapes from a underwater prison.
Yeah.
Would have been cool to see that.
Right.
Yeah, but they didn't. And it's always that cute kind of like, okay, we just happened to start following after the cool things just happened. All right, fine. And then he does a bit of cool chasing afterwards and stuff. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. Then afterwards, he meets Yoda back on Coruscant, and Yoda says, nearby my towel is, if wet behind the ears, you still are. And I'm like, all right, Yoda's being a bit sassy, fair enough. And then Mace Windu goes, of all the lore that gets passed down about you, Master Yoda, they leave out the sharpness of wit. What wit? It's just like, oh, mate, you wet? You want a towel? That's what he said, essentially, in Yoda speak.
Yeah.
Where's the wit? Where's the sharpness of wit there?
And again, Yoda is funny.
Yeah.
We all know that Yoda's funny. Like, that's one of the things that gets talked about with Yoda.
He gets funnier as he gets more senile.
Wow. And this is one thing that does make me laugh about the Star Wars universe, is that if you watch them in order of the chronological events within the story, Yoda goes from being a real swish CGI to a mad puppet.
Yeah.
As he gets older. And that just really amuses me.
And then he comes back in... Last Jedi,
yeah,
and they go back to the puppet,
yeah.
So it is consistent. Like when he's Force Ghost, he's a puppet still,
yeah, which is fucking weird, man. Mm. Like puppet Force Ghost Yoda just blew my mind.
Yeah, it was good. They kept it close to the original trilogy at the very least.
Yeah,
but I think the quote I just made, I think, is kind of sums up like what these kind of comics are, like a faux deepness or not even just deepness. Foe a lot of every other aspect.
Also, like, the thing that's interesting is they made Yoda do the Yoda thing for that one panel, right?
Mm.
But when he starts giving Mace instructions, they drop the Yoda thing.
Ooh,
because
let's double check that. That's a big accusation.
But they do drop the Yoda thing. He starts speaking. He the clauses on the sentences are arranged normally.
Completed your mission, you have. Good. Something else there is. coaxium, know it, do you?
No, you're right. You are right. I'm sorry.
I think it's because they get shorter and you get used to it. It says proceed and a person's name in the right order. But that's like a two-word sentence. Yeah, I think that'd be like a cardinal sin if you wrote a Star Wars comic and you dropped the Yoda speak. I feel like that'd be one of those things that would get you banned from writing Star Wars ever again.
Yeah, no, you're right. They did the Yoda
thing.
It says
may the Force be with you in the right way. Maybe that's, but that might be like because it's a word for word quote kind
Force
of thing.
Force with you, may it be.
Yeah, I think I can understand why that's the one thing he would say correctly.
I thought they dropped it, but clearly they didn't. Sorry, I'm wrong. I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
I'm
Do you know where wrong. That, this, I, the theory of where that comes from is, why he no. talked like that? Because there's another Yoda species called Yaddle, who's like another, I think another Jedi, potentially. But it's a Yoda with
hair. Is
there
another one of his species?
Yeah.
In what?
In other stuff, and she was recently used in one of the animations, I think.
Right.
I can't remember which one exactly. But
she's not in the original trail.
Not in the films. Or she's seen in, like, you know, with the big Jedi temple. I think she's, like, in the background or something in one of those.
But by the original trail, there's only...
No,
really
no,
Yoda
no,
left,
sorry, original trail. Sorry, prequels, sorry. Yeah, when big
But Yoda
Jedi
does
temple.
The back-to-front talking thing in the prequels, doesn't it? In the original trail, doesn't
yes.
he?
So the thing is, so Yaddle speaks normally. So right. that got across to people, like... Oh, so hang on. So it's not his species thing. Then what the fuck's going on here? Like, is he just a fucking weirdo? And then someone made the theory of he is thousands of years old. And that generally most other creatures have like similar to our human lifespans, like 100-ish years or so on a good life.
Yeah.
The theory is that he talks how people used to talk in the High Republic era.
Right.
So that's how they used to, people used to talk. So that's the space version of Shakespearean in a way.
Yeah. Space Shakespeare.
Yeah. The problem is they're now releasing a series called The Acolyte, which is set in the High Republic era, and they don't talk like that. So that just now has torpedoed that theory
because
out of the
that would
as
be
well.
A nightmare to write and watch and be a part of.
Potentially. He might be older than even that set, potentially. I don't know. Like,
yeah, because Grogu's like 50 and still an infant.
Yes. So they live thousands.
Yeah, his species. And is it? I'm right in thinking that his species are the original Jedi, aren't they?
Don't think so. I've not heard anything like that.
Oh, okay.
I think they're more force sensitive or more susceptible, like more likely to be force sensitive. I don't know if as a whole species they're like closer to the Jedi order or the force or anything like that.
Yeah. I want more Jedi in the Star Wars films. I would like to see like just a Star Wars film that's all Jedi.
I want less Jedi stuff. And that's not to say there's not good Jedi stuff. I prefer non-Jedi stuff because I feel like we've got an abundance of Jedi stuff already. I want more characters who get shot out of their ejector seats. Little bounty hunters who get shot out of their ejector seats and literally say, "You haven't seen the last of Yaya." I thought that was a great moment in this comic. I literally read that and I was like, that's great. You don't see enough of that trope.
Do you want a whole Yaya series?
I love a Yaya series where he speaks exclusively in film tropes of like bad guys. You haven't seen the last of me. Like,
this Yaya isn't big enough for the both yep, of us.
Exactly. That'd be great. No. Lean into it.
Yeah, I mean, we need to do something good next week.
All right, I'll find a good thing. I posed the idea of doing one particular thing to coincide with the release of a thing, and you weren't that excited about it, were you? No. So, and I'm not going to mention it just in case someone was like, and then we take it away, like, but we're not doing that.
Yeah, no, I can't think of... After this...
Yeah.
I can't, because it's just, it's hard. Do you know what it is? You can hear that I'm ratty.
Yeah.
On the episode. Because I'm just like... I'm having to talk about something that isn't particularly compelling or interesting to me. That's the problem.
What's weirder is we actually did a longer episode on them as well.
Well, I mean, I've spent a lot of it. Yeah, I mean, there was three titles, but I've spent a lot of it trying to avoid the topic.
And Truckers and Disneyland.
Oh, Truckers, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could talk about Truckers all day today. All
right, next week we'll do something interesting and different.
Okay,
we say.
Cool.
I'll find something like that. Or I was... No, it's not finished yet, actually. No, never mind. Yeah, we'll do something interesting and cool.
So, I'm sorry, humble listener. I apologize for this episode. I promise that I will hold Ryan to a higher standard of accountability when it comes to the comic books that we talk about.
Nah. I mean, you can hold it, but it won't change anything.
I'm gonna try and up the standard in coming episodes in terms of just how good the stories are so that we can get... A more interesting... The discussion's been relatively interesting.
Yeah, that's what we offer.
Even if the books aren't very good. So thank you for sticking with us for this one, where I've been miserable, Ryan has been Ryan.
And this has been a Star Wargishborg.
Star Wargishborg.
And it's got to be annual now.
Well, I mean, but we need to find a handful of good enough Star Wars comics to make a new Star Wargishborg. That's the
problem. We'll see what's out this time next year.
Yeah, if somebody who has some creative integrity would like to buy Star Wars from Disney, please, in the next 12 months, that would be great.
People with creative integrity don't have money. They're kind of exclusive.
True. They certainly don't have Star Wars money.
Exactly.
Thank you.
That's why we are here doing this and not rich, because of the abundance of creative integrity we have.
Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. I'm not going to do a call to action this episode because,
you know,
too much has gone on. Too much has happened today. But thank you for listening.
But also like and leave reviews and all that.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.